The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 130th episode of Dave's Gone By on this Thursday, June 9th, 2005. Feels like a long time since I've said these words to you. It's only been a week or two, but somehow you step out of a pattern, a rhythm, even briefly, and it can feel like weeks have gotten in between. In this case, it's because I was out of town the last week in May, so the station played a repeat episode. Actually, it wasn't even a repeat. It was an episode that was pre-recorded, mailed to the station, arrived a day late, thank you, UPS, and therefore never aired when it was supposed to. So technically, it was a new episode, even though it was a little out of sync time-wise. And then the week after that, last Thursday, I was thrilled and honored to host something different from my usual program, the first ever, possibly first annual, WGBB Tony Awards special. I hope you got a chance to hear that. I had an absolute blast. It did remind me just how nice it is sometimes to have co-hosts. I do so much of this program solo, apart from guests that I'm interviewing, that I forget just how fast and energizing and breezy it can be when you're sharing the burden of keeping the energy and the engine revved. Flagging energy or inspiration was certainly not a problem last Thursday, thanks to my co-hosts Jeff Goodman and Charlie Gross, both of whom have appeared separately on this program, but never together. And I think Thursday proved that at least once a year, we gotta get these guys back on, trading insults and quips and insights, especially since they brought food. I don't mean to sound crass, but Jeff stopped at a deli before the show, and I swear, he brought macaroni salad and pickles and sliced turkey and salami and peppers and mustard for three people. I swear, the place looked like the back counter of the Carnegie Deli. So, you know, that is a good rule for anyone wanting to be on the radio. Bring food. Good food. Doesn't have to be gourmet. Just bring lots of it and share. So between Charlie and Jeff and the food and all the other guests, it was really a banner night. We even got mentioned in the Daily News. David Hinckley gave the show a one-line mention in his radio column, which I had mixed feelings about because I've been hawking Hinckley. And if you've ever had your Hinckley hawked, you know just how painful that can be. No, but I've been sending Hinckley information about this radio show, Dave's Gone By, for months. Every week, pretty much without fail, he's on the mailing list for the press releases we send out, telling people what'll be on the next show. Anybody can be on that list. It's free. Just send me your email. Send it to davesgoneby@aol.com. davesgoneby@aol.com. You won't be added to any other mailing list or advertising junk list. It's just a private list of email addresses administered by me and my staff. And once a week, we give people a heads up to remind them to tune in. And I try to pop something funny into the releases themselves so that you might get a kick out of reading them beyond just the basic information. And so, David Hinckley at the Daily News has gotten these releases since October 2002, when Dave's Gone By first went on the air. Now this Thursday, unless I'm mistaken, and I'm not a subscriber to the news, I don't see every issue, so I can't be sure, but to my knowledge, this past Thursday was the first time I made his radio column. And I mean, I've had celebrities on, Tom Paxton, Neil Sedaka, Karen Grassley, and I had the 100th episode a few weeks ago, but nothing. Zip. Under the radar. And it's not as if he'd need 2 weeks' notice as a daily paper, but maybe because last Thursday came with a more official-looking release, and it truly was a special event, Hinckley made the space and gave us a line in the news, and I'm tremendously grateful to him. And I'm sure it got us a bunch of extra listeners. I know it got us a small flurry of emails. And the ironic thing about the column that Thursday, June 2nd, is that it was filled with small news. You know, there was a piece about Fox News Radio expanding a little bit and a couple of one-line items about WFAN and KTU and some live events planned at other local stations, including a live appearance by former monkey-turned-Broadway actor-turned-DJ Mickey Dolenz, doing his 100th broadcast the next morning from B.B. King's on West 42nd Street. Absolutely no clue in the column, or presumably in Dolenz, that all hell would break loose in New York radio the next day. Well, not all hell, but certainly a seismic shift to the guts of longtime radio listeners in the tri-state area, because Mickey Dolenz apparently did his thing at B.B. King's that Friday morning, played some oldies, schmoozed with the crowd, probably hung out till his morning drive shift was over at 10, came back to the station, and no doubt discovered what the whole world learned at 5 o'clock that afternoon. WCBS-FM, which had been the home of oldies radio in New York since 1972, suddenly changed formats. No advance warning, no audience polls, no big goodbye party, nothing. Just 4:55 p.m. oldies, 5 o'clock new music mix format. And Dolenz quit that day, as did the program director. And I'll be giving my thoughts on the whole CBS-FM changeover later in the program. As you can imagine, they're mostly negative. Vastly negative, in fact, but just how weird that was to be in the same story as Mickey Dolenz promoting this gig for CBS-FM that was, you know, about to go under in a certain way, doing my Tony show, coming off a big professional high, feeling great about local radio, and then next day hearing that this pointless, soulless corporate change had gone down, and one of the last bastions of a different radio style in the city, it just crashed me down a notch. But hey, I'm down, but not out. And I'm getting a big lift tonight from seeing an old friend, a colleague, and a cool guy going back quite a few years now, someone I knew first from his work, and then was privileged to meet in person later on. We've been long-distance friends ever since, because he lives in Florida now with his wife and kids and kids he teaches, and he's written, I guess, a dozen plays at this point, not to mention some screenplays, ghostwriting projects, and all those other things a writer does when he wants to make a living as a writer. His name is Bill Levengood, or professionally, William S. Levengood, and he's best known for his play Florida Crackers, which was staged at the late lamented Circle Repertory back in 1989. The lead actor then was John C. McGinley. Took him another decade to break through to TV stardom in Scrubs, and Bill kept writing plays. He published a couple, about which you'll hear more in a bit, and now he has a new play, Little Mary, a potentially controversial drama at the Sanford Meisner Theater on West 11th Street through the month of June. So, Bill Levengood is going to tell us about that play, about his other plays, about living in Florida while trying to work out of Florida, and it's going to be a fun night. So stay with me till 8 o'clock for my chat with Bill Levengood, my rant on CBMS-FM, and whatever else we have time for on this edition of Dave's Gone By. Brought to you by Hewlett Minuteman Press for all your copying and printing needs. 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners at Minuteman. And co-sponsored by Total Theater, publishers of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Everything you need to know about Broadway and beyond in the pages of Performing Arts Insider. So, thanks for stepping inside this radio booth with me tonight. Please remember that the content is rated DGB-13, just in case we make a joke that isn't DG pre-screened. And please remember that we're here on the air, AM 1240 WGBB, on the internet at AM 1240 WGBB.com, both places carrying the same smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music from me, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, and humorist, bringing you the 11 goodies on this June 9th, and we will get Florida Kraken with my friend Bill right after this. Jimmy, did you go home and write 1,000 times, "I will not disturb the class"?
Here, Mrs. Bitch Barb.
Psst, Jimmy, you were playing softball last night. How'd you do it?
Easy. I went to Hewlett Minuteman Press and made copies.
Hewlett Minuteman Press?
1315 Broadway. They copied everything at a great price. I could have even had it bound and laminated.
Jimmy?
Yes, Mrs. Bitch Farb?
Look what I found. A receipt. Uh-oh. Here's your change.
Oh! Oh! Oh!
What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, off-off-off-Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Is it good? Can you bring the kids? Performing Arts Insider is the theater guide. Call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511, or go to TotalTheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB in Freeport, New York, and live streaming on the web at AM1240WGBB.com. And I'm really excited to have my next guest in the neighborhood on this Thursday evening. Now, this is someone our paths have crossed in odd ways for quite a few years now, and it does go back more than a decade. The first time I ever heard this man's name, he had a play going up at the late lamented Circle Repertory Theater off-Broadway, a play called Florida Crackers. It made quite an impression on me. I thought it was a very good play. And me being a theater critic, it may not mean something to the world, but it means something to me. He made his mark with that play. I want to ask him also about this. What is it with playwrights, and I'm getting more and more of this, who have one name that they use when you talk to them and another name in print? Like a couple of weeks ago, we had Danny Arcieri, a Long Island playwright who had a show done out in California. But on paper, he's D.T. Arcieri, which he explained for very... So Bill W.M. dot S. dot Levengood. What's with the name?
Okay, well, it's because my name is William Levengood, and if you've ever had to actually sign the name William, it gets tedious. I-L-L-I-A-M is a tedious section of letters, so I went to W-M because it was easy to sign, and I said, since I'm signing it that way, I might as well be that way. But of course, Bill, in real life.
Right, people aren't going to call you Wum.
They did. Actually, some of my friends did call me Wum for a while, and I actually stopped using it simply because it gave critics something else to, throw a dart at me for.
Ooh. Well, we'll get into some of that, because our paths didn't physically cross until a few years later when we met at the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center, which is, you want to explain what that is?
That's the National Playwrights Conference. Every year there used to be about 1,200 playwrights would submit their work, and out of the 1,200, 12 would be selected, and at least two of them would be from out of the country. And you would go to the O'Neill Theater Center in Connecticut for the entire month of July, like it or not, you were there the whole month, and your play would be workshopped for 1 week and presented for like four staged reading performances at this wonderful complex. And it was sort of a farm league, as it were, for off-Broadway. My first play that was done there was 17 Black in 1993, and I got the Brodkin Scholarship Award for that, which is they give special awards to a few of the plays.
And I have to say, I was there that year because separate but together, there's sort of an apartheid there with critics. There's a National Critics Institute.
Yes, there is.
That reviews all the plays, but there isn't that much mingling. I mean, you have a talk-back session with everybody at the O'Neill after a play gets done, but the actual written reviews are available for playwrights to read, but they don't automatically, send them out and show people, because it has caused some problems in the past.
Yes, it's not like real life at the O'Neill. Critics and playwrights mingle and eat at the same table. It's
and
true.
Play volleyball.
And play volleyball.
Fun. It was a wonderful thing.
It really was a magnificent thing. It really makes you as a playwright feel special, which, a lot of playwrights, you don't feel too special. Usually when you tell someone you're a playwright, and if they don't know your name as having written one of the Disney musicals, they go, oh. Whereas at the O'Neill, it's like, we love playwrights. Playwrights are important, and so we're going to treat you very specially.
I understand that the alumni are really run the gamut from first-time playwrights in the same conference to August Wilson shaping his next play, or to even the Doubt guy,
Chanley,
John Patrick Chanley, I think was there. So
he was.
But here's before we get, by the way, to your new play, and we will talk about that because we want people to go see it at the Meisner.
Yep.
Yes, the Sanford Meisner Theater is showing Little Mary by William S. Levengood, Bill Levengood, and that's running from June 2nd through June 26th, 2005. And for more information on that, please go to the website littlemary.info. Was littlemary.com taken by a porn site or something?
There was some Little Mary, but it wasn't us. And it's funny because there's a little snippet in the play where it becomes littlemary.com. And when we ended up having to take littlemary.info, I changed it just to make myself laugh.
Yeah, no problem. But the thing I wanted to ask about 17 Black, which I saw developed there, I was kind of tracking the play there. Audiences really liked it. I assumed that was just going to go off Broadway. It was there. It was one of the plays that year that was there.
Yeah.
Everybody felt it. Even you could have taken the cast that you had, which is sometimes unusual, and brought them. What happened? Why did that happen?
I don't know. It went to the final stage at Circle Rep. In other words, it made it all the way to the PIP, which is a play in process, which is after the readings and all that. They actually rehearse it for a week and present it in the theater. And then in the final, so they said, well, we're trying to decide between these three or four for the last slot. And that was it. And it really happened at a production. I will confess something to you. It is based on one of my brothers, and I was always very shy about it. So I wasn't aggressively out there, because it's like if it was produced, my brother would then find out I had written this play about him, and he wasn't the sort who I would, you know, it would bruise his ego, to say the least.
Well, it's about an addicted gambler. So
yes,
a kind of
someone with an addictive personality.
True.
Certainly, yeah, and. And, well, sadly, my brother actually passed away this year, so...
Holy...
No, yeah.
Not from gambling?
No, cancer. No, he had actually gone past all that and was a successful attorney. But as you know, in the 17 Black, it is this compulsive gambler who is also a prodigy and an attorney and the son of a well-known Florida politician, right?
And so all of that has roots in...
In my life, slightly.
Fine, okay. Again, you twist it around.
I totally twist things when I write plays about things, yes.
Well, does your family show up in other... vaguely.
Yes, of course. Florida Crackers was myself and two of my brothers and my brother's friend. Now, I got lots of brothers, you got to understand. I've got four brothers and two sisters.
Okay.
So, one brother was 17 Black... Two other brothers were represented in Florida Crackers.
Yeah, but Florida Crackers is about a bunch of, you know, people just about to push, like, 30, almost dealing drugs and sitting in the sunshine. You guys were doing that?
Well, you remember there is the one brother who comes back from college slightly disillusioned, having, you know, but he's supposed to be the sort of college one, and then you have the middle one who sort of lost his way and just wants people to like him, and then you have the big womanizer who... is the one who's turning 30 and sort of wondering what he's going to do with the rest of his life. And he gets caught up with a friend of his who's gone from becoming a fisherman to a multi-millionaire by
running
the drug trade. And, of course, then organized crime finds out that this is going on and say, no, we want that. We want all your money that you're making, and end up killing him, as you know.
By the way, I should also tell the listeners that you can find out more about this play and a couple of his other plays because they haven't published, and I'm proud to say instrumental in that, because one of the other ways we hooked up a few years ago was I was working or trying to found a publishing company for theater books, kind of like Smith and Krause, and not like the Samuel French little chap books, but actual volumes that you put on your shelf.
Right.
You know, had one book come out, and it was Bill's. So... you can buy it.
Yeah.
It's called Florida Bound. Just email me, davesgoneby@aol.com, and I can tell you how to get a copy of the book. It really, it's got some Florida Crackers in it, 17 Black, which we've talked about.
What Is Art, which is my farce.
That's funny.
Jiva,
yeah.
And done out in California.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of my one-act plays also.
That's with Day of the Onondaga, I think, which is about
Dinosaur
Indians
Limbo.
Turning the tables. And, sorry? Yeah,
Dinosaur Limbo.
Right.
and Truck Stop Parking,
I like
which
that one,
became part of a full production of a longer play down in Florida.
Yeah, really? What did you end up calling it?
American Road, actually, and it really played well. It was five one-acts all about people in transition and on the road in America, and then they meet up in the fifth one-act.
Okay. Let me, let's get back to the new play, then.
Please.
Which is, again, it's called Little Mary. It's at the Sanford Leisner Theater. Is it an off-Broadway equity, or is it off-off? Or what
it is an equity showcase.
Cool. So what might happen if
Well, we're hoping, of course, that it will get enough press and attention, and we'll get the right people down there who will love it as much as they should and will then want to move it to off-Broadway or further.
Well, what's it about?
It is about a 15-year-old Mexican-American girl who is found to be carrying seven babies, though she is still medically a virgin.
Hmm.
And she tells the Catholic bishop that she lives in this farming community that he presides over, you know, tells him that God has spoken to her and told her these are his children. Mm-hmm. And it's about the...
Wait, these are God's children? Or
yes,
these are the
God's children. And, mm-hmm. and so it's about how this bishop and his mentor, this very popular and conservative cardinal from Rome, react to this miracle. And how everybody takes sides and whether it is a miracle or whether it's not. And the play is about faith and ambition and overpopulation, to tell you the truth.
Hmm.
Anybody who wanted to could walk out of the theater saying, well, that was clearly a play about God coming down and doing all this stuff. You could also come out saying, well, that was clearly a play about how people can manipulate God and religion to convince people of anything.
Okay, so it's not an Agnes of God thing of, like, is she crazy, is she not? She is preggers.
Well, she is pregnant. No, she is pregnant. And
yeah.
And it's like the way the church tries to manipulate it, because it becomes huge. She becomes a huge international sensation for the people who buy into it, that she,
right.
because she is in fact medically a virgin and does have seven babies.
Right.
But of course there's the liberal bishop who, not in a million years does he believe that this is happening, until everyone around him starts hearing the voice of God. And not everyone, but just the key, you know.
Yeah.
She says that God is speaking to her through her babies. The cardinal, who is so conservative, he starts hearing it and then tries to decide, well, do I dare declare that I'm hearing the voice of God when it could cost me everything?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it gets even hairier when he actually listens to her belly and hears the words from the babies, and the babies are telling him to stop the flood of humanity. So now
okay.
he has to decide, well, that's not what the Bible says is the will of God. So if God spoke to you and told you, my will is not what you have believed my will to be, what would you do? Would you follow the doctrine that you have been raised with that is the will of God, or do you accept the voice as the new will of God?
If God starts talking to me, you know, I'll do whatever, you know.
How will you be sure?
I'll stuff a Pop-Tart up my ass if God tells me to. There's nothing in the Bible about that, but he says...
And when you do, people will think you're crazy and that you're not hearing the voice of God, but simply you're disturbed.
But he was the only one who could hear them in her belly. None of the other...
That's right.
Oh, so they... It's just kind of a weird kind of, way to go about almost an abortion debate, but from the fetus's point of view, and they're for it.
Well, now, the thing is, I stay fairly clear of abortion because, you know, I'm a pro-choice guy, but I'm also
yeah.
not one of these people out saying, hey, everybody, go get your...
Yeah,
you know,
grab your hangers, yeah.
But it is about, you know, demanding, you know, so that he wants to demand abstinence and family planning and all these other things. He dare not go to that other place, but it's that. But it's very powerful people within the church whose careers and lives are at stake based on how they act and react to what is occurring in this play.
Now, where did the idea come from, though?
The idea started with, I guess, as you get older, I said there's not many things I'm just politically so passionate about that I am going to write a play about it, but this is one. I have long felt that population and overconsumption by humanity is probably our greatest evil or our greatest concern right now, and nobody wants to particularly address it because it's very unpopular. The left wing doesn't want anyone telling them how, you know, their individual rights are going to go, and they'll do what they want to. The right wing, you know, believes that it's God's will that everyone has as many children as they might. And so politicians don't want to talk about it, and it's very unpopular, and yet, as far as I'm concerned, it's more in global
important,
warming,
yeah.
Starvation. And if you begin reading books, just the mathematics of what our world population is doing is horrifying. It's terrifying. And why it isn't the, you know, headline on the paper yeah. every day, I don't know, other than, as I said, it's very unpopular and no one wants to deal with it.
The paper's going to want to be called Tree Huggers by the Radical Right.
Yeah, which is, you know, I used to talk about tree huggers, and that's the funny thing. I'm not that guy. I'm not somebody who's, you know, but I became so aware of this. I said, I have to do, you know, in my life, this will be my contribution. If it does anything, I don't know, but I have to write a play that addresses this and rings the bell. And one of the things that excited me most about Little Mary since it began, because I've been writing it and working on it for years, is at every stage and at every reading, it creates such impassioned discussion afterwards that the issues involved in it just get people revved up, and that's all I want to do. I want to get people revved up and talking. Dave, even though it's about all these very, very heavy issues, it actually plays, you know, it plays like a mystery. I mean, it really does, about, you know, what is really going on. Is this girl and her father really just trying to pull something over people's eyes when in fact she's just been raped, and sometimes, you know, sometimes the first intercourse doesn't break the hymen, so you could medically it's a rarity, and so it's like,
well,
the
people
who
go through her nose,
it can happen.
Okay.
Apparently it's rare, but what is rarer, that or the fact that in fact she's been impregnated by God? Yeah.
Well, no, I'm more inclined, obviously, to believe that, you know, somehow they zipped around the hymen and went straight for the elbow or something. I don't know.
If I were a rich man, I could do the Dave's Gone By show for years and years and never have to worry about money. But that's not the way things have worked out. So, I need your help. You can help me by helping yourself by advertising or sponsoring segments on Dave's Gone By. It's easy, it's cheap. Just go to davesgoneby.com and see the rate card, davesgoneby.com, and bring your message to my listeners and make us both rich. Big tall
house with the roof. Oh, honey, you turn me on, I'm the radio.
That's right, Joni. I turn you on all week long for a bunch of shows on WGBB, like Wednesday nights at 11 for psychic astrologer Joyce Keller, hosting radio's longest-running psychic advice show. She knew I'd say that. Thursday nights at 6, an hour before Dave's Gone By, it's WGBB Tonight with Larry Davidson. Friday nights at 6, Bonnie D. Graham has advice about being single and singular on Long Island's dating. It's a madhouse. It's a zoo. It's Mikey and Jimmy Saturday night. And then on Sundays at 7, Joe Salzone offers conservative politics with a sense of humor and an open mind on your world.
If you're driving into town,
dial in AM 1240 WGBB for Joyce Keller Wednesday nights at 11, Larry Davidson Thursdays at 6, yours truly at 7, Bonnie D. Graham Fridays at 6, and Joe Salzone Sundays at 7.
Call me at the station, the lights are all day.
Dave's Gone By listeners know I love a good play on words. But let me say a good word on plays, my plays, collected in a lovely book called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. Comedies that range from strange to deranged, from sad to satirical, fun to read, and unmistakably Dave. Just $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Put down that crappy bestseller and pick up some laughs. 516-295-1511 or davesgoneby.com.
Hi, this is playwright Bill Levengood. You are listening to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB.
I mean, I knew you and I got to know your work as a playwright, right, which is, unless you're in the top, top, top upper echelon of fame, not even of talent, but of fame, you really don't make a living at. So how do you go about making a living without becoming a taxi driver, 9 to 4, whatever it is, and then going home and writing if you can pry your eyes open?
I've been somewhat of a self-starter all my life, Dave. So in this case, I teach. I got a job teaching. And I actually now have this wonderful 600-seat state-of-the-art theater that they built. They built for me, I will say, but it's not exactly like that. But in fact, you know, when I got there, we were in a gymnasium, and now we're in this great facility. I've been teaching now. They gave me my 10-year medallion, which was scary. And I also started with my wife, Diana, the Live Arts Peninsula Foundation, and we produced large-scale new musicals, including two that I wrote the book for and directed. And these were like, again, $250,000 productions.
Are those pageants or musical?
No, there's like book musicals.
Cool.
Yeah.
Which were done, is this a high school or
no, this is a professional productions. There were this strange amalgamations. The first one was called Web City, and it was about this man who was called the P.T. Barnum of Retail, who came in like 1927 to St. Petersburg and created, starting with this tiny little drugstore, this empire that covered 10 city blocks. He was the first shopping center. He was the first Walmart. He was a nut. I mean, he would shoot himself out of cannons. He would sell underwear in the tobacco shop. Anything just to get attention. He bought more advertising than anyone, and a lot of people actually may have heard of him because he had billboards that went all the way up to North Carolina. You know, he was one of the first ones to do that, the hundreds of billboards leading you to Web City.
Right. Yeah.
And his life story was fascinating. It was about a tunnel vision that he had to make this life for himself, and how his family suffered around him while the community, you know, embraced him and said, "Aren't you the, you know, greatest thing that ever happened?" But meanwhile, his family was.
But that production
left in
played,
shambles.
And I think it was quite. I mean, people loved it.
Yes,
it's something that can't.
Nobody down there thinks that it can't move, and I don't know that it. It's not the flavor of Broadway right now. It is not. It's not a Disney film that has been adapted, and it is. It's like a traditional book musical. If we were back, 30 years ago, it would have been in New York and no problem. They just aren't doing new book musicals that don't have just complete marquee value, which unfortunately is how our world is, and it has to do, I think, with the internet and the information age. If you don't have a name, if the thing that your product you're selling, whether it be theater or anything else, doesn't have a name that the millions of people out there recognize, it's very hard to get to sell it to people.
Well, yeah, but one should be attaching a name. Like the guy who plays Webb would not be the same guy who plays in Florida.
Well,
would be the, Goulet.
If we got Kevin Bacon as Doc Webb, I assume that would. Yes.
Right. Well, no, but that's what it all is now. I mean, Pillow Man is on Broadway, well, because McDonough has a name, and because it has Jeff Goldblum, and, Zelko Ivanek is not actually.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying, or Billy Crudup. Things get there. Yeah.
It played like magic where it, in Florida, people came in droves. It was the biggest ticket seller that this 2,000-seat arena had in a decade, and the local community theater did it, and it was the biggest seller they'd had in their 83-year
history. So it could be done even small scale. So,
you know, Dave, I don't have the support system, I suppose I'm saying. I don't have the marketing. So if I'm not going to do it myself, it's not going to happen, and I don't have time to do it myself. So,
right. Well, you have an agent, of course. You used to.
Oh, I've had five. I've been with some of the biggest around, but I don't have one now.
But from personal...
It was personal for a while because I was doing all this work that I was getting for myself, and I said, my agent's not really doing that for me. But and now it's simply because I live in Florida. And even with my track record, it's just very difficult to get an agent.
And go.
I know. I'm just telling you, this is the perception of New York agents. It's like you live in Florida and you want representation. We'll see. I'm hoping, actually, that this production will attract a new good agent for me.
What about film? What about television? And I think Ghost Written.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. I don't know if I can say what.
Oh, yeah. I'll say, yeah. I might have Ghost Written four of the Hardy Boy novels.
You
possibly.
Might have.
Somebody might have done that, yes.
But it wouldn't have been the original Franklin. I mean, have there been new Hardy Boys over the past few years? There must have been.
Well, there probably have been, Dave. They probably all have the name Franklin W. Dixon on them.
Right, but I remember getting the set when I was a kid, and there was the set,
right.
And I read them.
No, on and on they go.
And then they're still, okay.
On and on. I think they do two different age-level series, six per year in each.
Six per year?
Yes.
Oh, my God. What a bankrupt of us, because we used to get those old books with the blue spines and the dark blue top.
Yes.
Whatever, I guess we gave them away. And what other projects, like, you know, outside the bounds of playwriting, but...
Well, it's, yeah, I mean, I write screenplays. My wife made a short film a couple years ago. I actually had a short play of mine called Steve that was done in the Brave New World, the theater addresses 9/11.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Which was done at Town Hall in 2001 on the anniversary.
Yeah.
It was, in fact, it was weird.
Wait, you mean 2002?
2002, sorry. Right. And my play was actually done on September 11, 2002. It was a little eerie.
Yeah.
And Fisher Stevens was in that, and they made a short film out of that. Even I, when someone came to me and said, you know, we're doing this, would you write something about 9/11? I said, what are you going to write? I mean, we've seen it. We've seen every bit of the terror and horror and heartbreak.
But not the musical comedy.
No, we haven't seen that. I didn't go that route. But it was interesting because there were a lot of really great writers who were involved with that. Stephen Sondheim, Neil LaBute, Christopher Durang, a whole bunch of people. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, most of them obviously... based in New York, so they were there, and they were...
And I just happened to be passing through New York for one of my readings, and this producer who liked my work came and said, would you do this? And I was obviously honored. So I said, I will try.
Cool. Well, good. I mean, that's also part of it. Being hooked up still within the community, it is tough in Florida, but being hooked up in the community of writers and see... and network and...
We're the big fish in the little pond in the Tampa Bay area as far as, you know, theater.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice. It's not like that's awful to be there. And in fact, you know, I talk to New York people, and I'd say, yeah, we're producing new shows, and we do about two a year, and some of them are these big, lavish, you know, $250,000 productions with large cast. And they say, boy, you should stay there and do that because, you know, it's hard scrabble up here.
Yeah, I mean, look at how obviously Broadway and opera always struggle. But you saw that probably article in the Times about high school theaters now. I mean, they're getting these multi-million-dollar complexes and, like, major theater... Yeah, not major theater, but
I hope I saved that so that I can show it to the administration at my school that, do you see, this school spent $116,000 on their musical.
I mean, on one show.
Because, of course, there's other...
I think my high school
like
budget...
We have a new headmaster coming in, and it's like, you spent $15,000 on a high school show,
exactly.
Like that was like out of this world, and of course it's like, no, it's nowhere near out of this world based on what some other people are doing.
Here are these eighth graders doing Sweeney Todd with an actual shoot. It's like, okay, wow. You know, I mean, I remember my high school show that I was in was Neil Simon's Come Blow Your Horn, and I think the budget was about $1,000, give or take.
Right.
You know.
But you know what's, teaching has been absolutely fantastic. I teach at Shorecrest Preparatory, and they've been so good to me, and I love my students. And in fact, one of my past stars who's going to Juilliard is in Little Mary. Another of my past stars who's going to NYU is our ASM, and another one of my past stars who just graduated from Florida State's theater program is our assistant director. So,
cool. Well, actually, yeah, let me clue people in on some of the people starring in the show. By the way, there's a somewhat well-known person in it, Ron Orbach.
Yes.
Jerry Orbach's, late Jerry Orbach's something, no? Or
I don't know. Everyone likes to think that. I don't know if that's true.
Oh, well, I think they're related somehow, but people wouldn't know Ron best for Laughter on the 23rd Floor, which he did on Broadway.
Right, and for people who don't go to theater, he was the driving instructor in Clueless, right?
I just have to mention this name because I've seen him do off Broadway stuff, and I love it. Kaipo Schwab.
He's
great.
What
a name!
He's
Kaipo
great.
Schwab.
He's Hawaiian. He's funny as can be.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And by the way, we are talking again about Little Mary. Yeah. I've got to keep pushing that for people to go see Little Mary at the Sanford Meisner Theater off, equity off Broadway, sort of. June 2nd, playing all the way almost to the end of the month. And the Meisner Theater is on between 22nd and 23rd
and you
on
can
11th Avenue.
Get tickets through the website at www.littlemary.info or at theatermania.com.
Right. And it's also, it's a short-ish play. It's like less than 2 hours. So
like an hour 45.
Packs a lot of stuff. You do that. You do tend to pack a lot of stuff into a shortish running time.
Yes. Well, I have a short attention span, I guess. So I might write a play that might start at 2.5 hours, but by the time you guys will see it, it'll be an hour 45. Just because, I want it to work. I want the play to play to an audience, and if that means I have to cut out, two of my favorite pages, off they go.
That's amazing. I mean, I don't mind sort of light editing, of like going through and striking a line here and there, but any kind of like real get your hands in up to the elbows chopping away is one of the worst parts of writing for me. To you, it's just like, it doesn't work, it goes.
That's right.
You don't try to salvage, this bit, or...
My hands have been deep in it. Well, it is having to do with the sense of how it plays. I'm not saying the stuff I'm cutting out didn't read well, but as you watch it, as actors get into the heads of your characters, and they suddenly come to a point, and they go, what am I doing? How can I possibly, with this being what is on my mind, how can you have me saying that? And it's like, well, that's an important thematic element that I need to get. And it's like, it won't play, and on we go. So,
I know most playwrights won't divulge, but are you working on something else?
In my capacity at Live Arts, I've met a lot of people who are involved in technology in a big way, but I mean like who are like CEOs of New York Stock Exchange companies, and I'm scared and fascinated by huge conglomerate corporations, the division of wealth being pushed towards that top 1% more and more and more, and about the litigation and the legal system and how horrendous that's become. And I'm going to have, it's sort of like Gladiator, something. Those two things are going to collide in a play about a CEO and a high-powered lawyer who have been friends most of their life, and then the high-powered lawyer has a chance to bring a class-action lawsuit against the...
Well, so you already have this kind of mapped out. I mean, you're already...
I've mapped out as much as I have. That's one of the things I want to do. And others are like screenplays. I've got a new screenplay.
I hate to have
that sentence come out of my mouth.
Hey,
but
I have
a California screenplay.
Yeah.
But I do. I have one that's actually finished, and I just have to do a polish on it. And I have a couple more behind that. But one reason it is, how plays, as you said, don't make a living for you. And as much as I am loving this experience, when I finish here, I don't want to do a play for a while because it's exhausting for... Mm. Well, we'll see whether it pays off by, what happens to it beyond this. But certainly the amount of time that I've put into Little Mary is fairly extraordinary by my standards.
Let me get to some personal stuff as we get close to wrapping this up. But you mentioned your wife, Diana Lucas Levengood, who is a photographer and sort of co-project person on a certain aspect. You have kids.
Yes, we do.
Well, how do you balance all that?
Well, it's been... we got to stop, basically. We've
how many do you have?
Stop having kids. We have two kids, but I mean, we have to stop. The lifestyle we've been living for the last 5 years has just squeezed it every ounce of everything out of us. And we have to slow down because it is hard. And we have two of the sweetest, most wonderful girls ever, Charlotte and Alice. And we just don't have enough time for them. Mm-hmm. We ourselves are just so stressed to the max that, and so when Little Mary's over, I've sworn to my wife that I will not take on any new projects for a while. And we just need to go to our house and be with our kids. And I'm off for 2 months from teaching. So
that's right. That's...
My wife and I need to be face to face and say, "Now you are again." And my girls are coming up to see the show, and I can't wait to. But it's tough one now.
How old are they?
6 and 9.
Oh, okay.
And I've been out of town for almost a month, and it's really hard.
I guess we'll close with just your thoughts about playwriting in America and New York. Well, not so much in Florida, but in general, of what writers tend to be tackling, or
I was actually out to dinner with Michael Riedel, if you know him.
Oh yeah.
Yes, and I made the mistake. I said yes, and this, I feel like at this point in my life, and for this point with, for writers, there, our world and our country is in such a mess right now that we almost have to. It's almost our duty to start addressing issues. And he said, "Oh God, not an issue play." Ah,
yeah, that's Michael.
Yeah, but that's how I feel right now. It's like I've written a number of plays about, like I said, my brothers and my family and my wife and our lesbian friends in California and all this, but. And not that it has to be, you know, waiting for Lefty, like where we're out there banging a gong, but
there's doubt. The most popular play of the season is the likely Tony winner, or is an issue play.
Yeah, I think that's because as you get older, it's like, well, I might as well write what I feel is important and I need to, and so that's at least right now, that's where my head is, and maybe after everyone says, "Oh, we hate issue plays and go away," I'll stop doing that. But that's right now, that's what I feel, and not to get political, but it's just with our government, with what is happening in our country and around the world, I think you have to address some of the larger issues and try to get people focused on them instead of silly stuff.
Well, Bill Levengood is trying to do just that with his play, Little Mary, that is, again, playing at the Sanford Meisner Theater on 164 11th Avenue, that's just between 22nd and 23rd Street, playing all the way through June 26th, and again,
Thursday through Saturday nights, and Sundays at 5.
They have a Sunday at 5, which is a really great time. I always like seeing plays Sunday at 5. More information, go to the website, littlemary.com. Info, not littlemary.com, littlemary.info, or if you want to bypass that, if you're already intrigued enough to just go buy tickets immediately, call 212-352-3101, 212-352-3101. Bill Levengood, I want to thank you so much for stopping into the neighborhood. I want to wish you best of luck with the play and all your projects.
Thank you, Dave, and good luck with your show and the rest of your theater season here in New York.
Thanks.
Oh my God, this is terrible.
What?
There are 168 hours in a week, but Dave's Gone By is only 1 hour long.
I know, I'm just on Thursday night.
That's not enough!
Well, why don't you get my CDs?
CDs?
All my complete shows are on compact disc. $14 a piece, or less if you buy a bunch. Just go to davesgoneby.com. Fully packaged, and they make a nice gift, too.
Well, my depression is cleared.
Great.
But not my psychosis. What chicken is this?
What do the letters DFSX stand for? They stand for Dave's Gone By, that's what, because DFSXRadio.com is rebroadcasting vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern Time. So you hear me on GBB and then listen to me on DFSXRadio.com every Thursday night at 8 and 11. It's all the Dave you could ever want. Kinda. Dave goes off, Dave goes off, Dave goes off, Dave goes off.
Hey, I can't find that on the radio.
Yeah, it was a bad weekend for radio a couple of days ago when WCBS-FM didn't go off the air, but it changed formats, which is a big deal, even though formats get changed around here all the time. Because they had pretty much the same format with tinkering back since 1972. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, on Friday, pretty much without warning, 5 o'clock p.m., boom, with the resignation or firing or what have you of the program director and at least one of the DJs, WCBS-FM went from an oldies mix kind of station to some new kind of format that's coming out of Canada, of all places, being tried and developed in a bunch of American cities. And the format, I swear to God, is called Jack. We are being jacked with this new format on radio. Now, on the surface of it, there's something that sounds pretty good about it. I mean, let me not just knock it down immediately. It sounds like the idea is to really be eclectic, to play a mix that is almost, if not more, eclectic than WCBS FM used to be, because CBS, you know, obviously concentrated on music of the 50s and 60s and 70s, but over the years, they'd be sprinkling in all kinds of weird chart hits from R&B and soul and pop and what have you. In fact, I'm sure a lot of people who love the oldie stuff were rankled just at that of all the other kinds of things that they'd been putting in. But at least they still had the oldies to glom onto. Now, this Jack format is saying, oh, okay, yeah, switch and play Earth, Wind, and Fire right next to an Elvis Costello tune. Now that, okay, makes me perk up my ears and go, well, that could be pretty cool. That's what interesting creative radio could be about, breaking down the formats that we've had for these decades of all these styles of music hitting up against each other, seeing where the influences came from. But, okay, sounds good, but of course in reality, American commercial radio is not going to be any good at all. It's just trading, as they say, Tom Jones, the Four Tops, and the Supremes for stuff like the Beastie Boys, No Doubt, and Duran Duran. After I got the news of the change, I went to the CBS FM website, and it was still unchanged. They had the old schedule of DJs, which is kind of an insult. So you see the names there. Bobby J., Steve O'Brien, Dan Taylor, Bill Rock, Don K. Reed, Mickey Dolenz, Bob Shannon, Randy Davis, Norm N. Knight, Harry Harrison, of course, and Cousin Brucey. Now, the interesting thing is, again, the website still has them up there, and maybe some of them are still working for the website. The first report was that all the DJs were fired and let go. Then the next report, now this was on CBS TV, which may be trying to paint a nice picture of things. They're saying, well, no, a couple left, but they're all just being recapacitated in other duties at the radio station, which may mean that the website is an oldies site, and that they're going to keep that and keep it all going on the web, and just change the actual on-air station to this Jack format. Which I think, if that's true, at least it's something, but they kind of got it backward. Because think of the audience, the obviously aging audience, for the real oldies, the 60, 70-year-old people, who are going to be less familiar with listening to radio on the web, less familiar certainly with iPods and downloading and things like that. They'd be more likely to go just turn on the radio in their house or the car and listen. It should be the Jack format that the general managers have specifically geared towards young folks with iPods and doing downloading. That should probably be right on the web, don't you think? A format change is one thing. It's got to be expected these days. It just happens. With apparently no commercials, at least for a while, which I find okay, great. What's the catch? No weather, no traffic. Okay, I don't drive. What's the catch? The catch? No DJs. It's not like they're replacing Cousin Brucey and Norman Knight and all those people. It's just going to be electronically done, song after song, computerized, some hired gun voices, no DJs. That's the suck part. That's the part where they get it wrong completely. Here's General Manager's Chad Brown's words, verbatim. Jack FM promises to be unlike anything currently heard in the market. Nonsense, it sounds like everything else. That's my little input. Others have tried to imitate the Jack format, but time and again it's been proven that the success of the format is achieved by fully committing to its objectives in delivering a completely new and unique product. We look forward to changing the landscape of the New York radio market, blah, blah, blah. As I said, I have nothing against more variety, but it is the absence of personality that has destroyed American radio, and it continues, and it's continuing at CBS FM, or what I guess they're calling now Jack. People should probably know, if you do love that kind of music, which I'm not a big fan of, but it should be there in a format somewhere, because people were listening to it for 30 years. CBS was the 8th-ranked station. I'm not sure if it was revenue-wise or listener-wise, but geez, that's not bad, considering all the list of the radio stations that there are. There are oldies shows. There's like Dan Romanello's Group Harmony Review on WFUV late night, and of course Mickey B on GBB on Friday nights. Or I'm sure there's probably an oldies station on satellite and Rev Radio as well.
It's that same song on the radio. It makes me sad. I meant to turn it off.
Well, speaking of turning the radio off, I've got to kind of turn this mic off and leave, but I want to do some thank yous very quickly on this episode. Thank you to Bill Levengood, and just a reminder to catch Little Mary at the Sanford Meisner Theater through June 26th. I want to thank my wonderful and beloved wife, Joyce, program director, Tom Ross. I want to thank our sponsors, Hewlett Minuteman Press and Togel Theater's Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Got to remind you all for eclectic music with a DJ, me. Catch Filler up tonight at 9. Just an hour from now, I'll be playing Howlin' Wolf, Ice Cube, and Judy Garland. Let's see Jack match that. Also, reminding you to listen to more Dave's Gone By right now on DFFX Radio, and again at 11. Go to davesgoneby.org for all the information and the links to click. Next week, a very special guest, but I'm not going to say who, because it's 99.99999% sure, but not 100%. Till it is, I won't say anything, but do come next week, June 16th, Thursday, 7 p.m., and check it out. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Close with the good oldie days and gone by.
Well, you can't turn him into a company man. You can't turn him into a whore. And the boys upstairs just don't understand anymore. Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play. And he don't want to change what don't need to change. And there goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. There goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ. There goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play, and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. And there goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ. Sometimes you can't.